Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio.
Hi, welcome to Design Oracles.
Hello, welcome back.
Amity and Diane here. Welcome back. So, Diane, today, what are we talking about?
So, we decided, since we're talking about materiality, that we would pick five houses that are kind of very quintessential one certain type of material.
Awesome. And also ones we really thought were interesting and liked personally.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
So, what do we have first?
I don't know if there's any that we don't like.
Oh, sure. I'm sure I could find houses. Okay. We should do a whole podcast on houses we don't like. That'll go over well.
So first we are going to talk about one, Jardin Majorelle. And
that is Yves Saint Laurent's private Marrakesh house and gardens, brought to you by from Anna Delvey's trip to Marrakesh.
Although I think it was pretty popular before that.
Yes, it was. That does seem to be a touch point for people right now. That's why people know about it again. It's Anna Delvey, unfortunately.
So it's the Majorelle is because it was created by the French Orientalist artist Jacques Majorelle. And he was actually the son of a French cabinet maker that made a lot of Art Nouveau cabinets, which was, took you back to nature and organic. And I can pontificate about the Art Nouveau movement, but the furniture in that period is so amazing. So he was the son, and he was a painter, and so he made this atelier, if I'm saying that
you
right,
are.
On this site, and then developed all these gardens. And I've never been there. Have you been there?
I haven't been there. I would love to go. It's very much about the gardens, and I think the sort of luxurious, beautiful colors and the lifestyle that being there, if you're, I guess, a rich person like Yves Saint Laurent, brings.
Well, he bought it to restore it so that everyone can continue to enjoy it. So it's a public space that everyone can go to. And when his partner died later, after him, they donated it to become a public space.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that is notable about it is that it feels very rambling, and it's like a labyrinth of room after room. And it's a lot of homes in that region feel that way. They're expansive, they're low. A lot of times they are. Then a lot of that's for being cool, and then the gardens provide an opportunity for water, the sounds of water to be heard throughout the spaces. And so, and they tend to be made of tile and, beautiful paint colors. So the materials are very beautiful.
Yeah, and the biggest thing, if any of you decide to Google this as we're chatting, is the color. It is cobalt blue everywhere. And actually, Majorelle blue is actually a blue color that you can get. But basically, every single piece of structure is painted that color. Now, there are tiles and some kind of gilded ceilings, and there's also a bunch of Islamic decorative elements, because, of course, it's in Morocco, the way they do the arches and triple arches, and the columns are
some
really
brick.
Skinny.
There's brick, and it looks like concrete materials as well.
Yeah, and
plaster.
There's the different paving materials, and then there's a lot of tile.
Mm-hmm.
And if any of you have been to any kind of Moroccan Islamic-inspired spaces, there's always a lot of tile, and it has a lot of really great bright colors. And then the different patterns that they use are also very of, I don't know if it's Islamic time, but kind of the Moorish architecture,
Moorish.
I guess would be the appropriate word to say. So, and there's a gazillion cacti when you look at the images. And what's fascinating to me is the juxtaposition of that against this cobalt blue. It really lets you see these cacti in all their great beauty. I love cactus. I don't know about you, Amity.
I do.
I think they just look so cool. And so against the blue, you really start to see all their cool forms.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I first realized I had seen pictures of it in black and white, when I realized it was that color, I was taken aback. But you're right. Seeing it next to the
green
is
really
beautiful.
That is really funny. You saw them in black and white.
Well, I also love that Well, first of all, yes, the relationship of the green to the blue, but I also love how shady all the spaces are. When you look at images of, you know, fashion images that have been, there's a lot of photography, fashion photography that goes on there. There's always a lot of play of light. There's the bright, bright light, you know, from the region, and then there's the dark, cool rooms that feel very Moroccan. And so I think that that play is really nice, that drama, the sort of dappled light that you get from the bright sun coming in through all of the cactus and the gardens and things. So it's interesting to think about light as it's not really a material, but how it affects and plays off of the materials that make up these spaces to add a whole nother element.
And I would say also paint.
Yeah.
Given all the blue.
A lot of maintenance on that.
I would say paint color, which we are going to have an interview with paint expert here. So, so having one color that is all paint really, you know, is such a, becomes a material.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And then, do you have more to say about that one? Because I would love to jump into Gaudi.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, the next one that we were looking at was Casa Vincennes by Gaudi, commissioned to build in 1883, and it's just been opened recently to the public. It was never open to the public. I haven't been there, but I think you have, right?
Yeah, we just went there back in April, this last April.
Yeah, it just got opened.
I had been
last
dying
November.
To go because it is recently opened. Mm-hmm. It is his first urban project, and I think his first residence that Gaudi did. I think individual residence.
In the urban setting, yeah.
Yeah, in the urban setting. And you mentioned tile in the last one. There's certainly a lot of tile in this.
This is pretty much the main material.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
In this one, right?
Yes. And then one interesting thing that I did not know was an even an option in interior finish out, but there's paper mache everywhere.
Oh.
There are paper mache, I guess you would call them sort of tiles, inset into the ceilings. And of course, I don't know how well the original ones held up.
I was going to say, how long did
covered.
Those last?
Yes, they've been redone when they redid it. But, I mean, I do own papier-mâché art that is, you know, 40, 50, 60 years old. So I guess it can hold up over time if the elements are not, if it's not exposed to the elements. But that was a really interesting thing to find out, that papier-mâché was an option. Of course, now I'm trying to figure out how we can find a papier-mâché artist to make tiles for us for walls here, because I think that would be amazing.
Right. So I don't know, again, if you want to Google this image, but it has quite the play of shapes and materiality on the outside of this. A lot of, you know, plays in the facade.
I mean, a lot of levels. A lot of.
I mean, it's basically one flat wall.
Articulated.
Ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the articulation of it. You get so many different plays with pieces coming further out than other pieces, and so you get all this great shadow. And then the different colors. It's greens and reds and different types of greens. Is there, you were there
already? Yeah, and also there's flowers in the tile. There are beautiful little, I think they're orange flowers in every little tile on, not every, but in the green and white tiles on the face of it have little yellow flowers.
About how big are the tiles?
They vary in size. They're pretty small, maybe 8x4 even, I think. So
wow.
They're all very small. There's a lot of them. Definitely labor intensive to put them up and to maintain them, I would think. But really, really beautiful. And this feels like a sort of an Arabic looking space, like
kind
a Moroccan,
Moorish inspired
space for sure too.
Well, Gaudi, as we've talked about him before, was so inspired by nature and taking cues from nature to design his buildings. And so, again, with all those flowers you're talking about and the paper mache, he's just, everything he did took inspiration from.
Everything was about the nature. And then on the interior, there's a lot of painted surfaces as well. The doorways and passageways are all painted. So that material painting, also paneling, wood paneling, stained wood paneling. There's painted wood paneling. There's tile. And there's stained glass, which is a material we haven't talked about yet, but is a big element in this space.
Oh.
With the light coming through it, you can see that it changes the light, and then it gives an opportunity for more decoration, which there's every inch of this is
You couldn't have tried to get
decorated. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. The ceilings, I definitely advise everyone to go take a look at it. Another thing was that in the design, because it was supposed to be like a summer house, mm-hmm. so it was kind of focused around a courtyard with a big waterfall. And apparently one of the gates you walk through is, again, inspired by the garden and organic, and it's got these big leaf and flower
motif
elements mm-hmm. made out of metal. And then, again, with all the floral tile.
Yeah, and I love the play of brick and tile all mixed together in the articulation of the facade.
What was all the flooring like in there?
A lot of it was tile mm-hmm. inside.
Was it all kind of painted different colors?
No, the floor actually was quiet compared to all of the other surfaces.
Had you had to get grounded somehow?
Yeah, it was definitely like a religious experience to visit. I highly recommend it. Get your tickets and go. It was amazing. And then when we first started talking about what our season would be about, and Diane and I started looking for houses that had interesting materials and that we would, you know, want to bring to the table, and what is your favorite and what do you like? I was ignorant of this particular house I'm about to bring up, which is the Frank Lloyd Wright, the Ennis house. Mm-hmm. Diane, being an architect and having gone to architectural school, she was familiar with it. But my head blew off. I was amazed. And part of it is I love that in both of in the ones we've talked about so far and in this one as well, these are not necessarily Western-inspired spaces.
Right.
They're sort of Eastern, more exotic for at least America mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Americans. That's one of the things I loved about this one. It feels, looks maybe Aztec. So I guess that would be South American.
Yeah, so it's Frank Lloyd Wright, and apparently this is one of Frank Lloyd Wright's favorite houses that he did. It is inspired by Mayan architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Frank Lloyd Wright was really into exploring new materials and was, with falling water, it was the concrete and working on having these great expanses. So with this one, they actually use sand and granite from the site. It's in Los Angeles. And from the site, they made these blocks. And they're square. And then they actually have this Greek-inspired G-type motif design on them. It's kind of a stylized G. When you look at it real close, it looks almost like a G. And mm-hmm. so this block is everywhere on this house. It's the entire house.
It clads the entire exterior. It clads the walls in the interior.
Mm-hmm. And it was built in 1924, and it's had numerous owners. And actually, you probably have seen this house. Have you seen the movie Blade Runner?
I have. Oh my gosh, it's in Blade Runner?
Can you believe that?
I didn't know that. I've slept through that movie at least 12 times.
But, it has this feeling about it, right? That's not like most houses.
It's kind of otherworldly. I've not really seen anything quite like it. And it's a house, a home. It doesn't feel... But even though it's concrete and all this tile, it still feels homey. The floors there's a lot of wood as well mixed in with the concrete.
Well, and Frank Lloyd Wright does his usual trick of mm-hmm. you come in at a very low ceiling entrance, mm-hmm. and then you come up these stairs, and then you're in these big, grand, tall spaces. Now, these same blocks are inside the house as they are outside, so every wall surface is this. Stone block.
Right, stone block. Mm-hmm. And then there's tile as well. There's decorative tile, sort of metallic-looking decorative tile. It does have a lot of nature-influenced imagery as well.
And he actually allowed someone to come in and design something. Usually he designs all the furniture and everything. So Blanche Osterdag had designed the living room fireplace, which is this beautiful, tall ceramic piece that has this big, tall tree on the side and then all these glittery, pretty tiles on the other side of this over top of the fireplace.
And it's interesting when you look at it. It does, that piece of it does really stand out. It's a little more feminine.
Yeah.
He allowed it to happen.
I wonder what was happening there.
Exactly.
She did three fireplaces for him, and this is the only one that's still in existence today. So, yeah, I was really excited. I was going to get to go see it for the AIA convention in L.A. back in 2020, but then, of course, it was canceled.
Yes.
So I was very sad.
I would love to see that house.
But it sits up top, has great views of L.A., and has a really nice big swimming pool, and has been, again, had numerous owners. The latest, in 2019, it sold for $18 million. And the can't remember who the guy was. He had bought it and in the 90s for like $4 million and then helped restore it. And then
I'm so glad people are taking care of it. I think that's amazing.
It's on the National Historic of
Good Register.
Registered mm-hmm. properties, yeah.
So interesting to move from that to another extremely famous that more people probably know about, the Glass House, Philip Johnson.
Yeah, by Philip Johnson, very prominent New York architect, good pals with Mies van der Rohe, the Bauhaus movement, all of that fun stuff. This one is just, of course, it's all glass and steel, and there's no walls inside except for the circular brick bathroom and then fireplace. It's a free open plan.
Completely.
And, you know, I think we've talked about before the Barcelona Pavilion, and that was Mies van der Rohe or one of his claimed works. And so this was supposedly slightly inspired. And they were supposed to, I guess, you know, be good buddies, but apparently his first visit there, he stormed out all mad at Johnson about who knows what.
Yeah, who knows.
And the Barcelona chairs are in there.
Yes, the Barcelona chairs. And I think it's safe to say that a lot of this house, it's important where it's positioned. It would be important where this house is positioned.
Yeah, there's no window treatments.
Because there's no window treatments. Now, there is the bathroom is closed off. But to be in this space, I think, would be very peaceful and lovely because of what it looks out on.
Yeah,
on
it's a 49-acre site. So a lot of property there, and the house is only 1815 square feet,
and so it's not very big. And then the floors, I believe, are brick. I don't know if they're concrete brick, but they're made of this sort of it's a
like
herringbone
or
a chevron pattern, I think, on the floor. But anyway, it's obviously very beautiful sculptural space. Because it's small, I think it saves itself from feeling too cold. If it was a really large space, I think it might not feel good. But this is a true indoor-outdoor feeling space. And it's amazing that... When was it built, Diane? Did you
know
when it was built?
1949.
Yeah, which I think is amazing. It feels so...
And there is some walnut in there.
Contemporary.
Which, there is a little bit of that wood. To help make you feel a little softer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's pretty cool. And actually, the open concept plan is actually pretty typical. You know, the bedroom is still kind of off to one end, and then the open living area and the kitchen off to the side.
Incredibly inspiring. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So definitely look that up. And then I also, introducing the next house we're going to talk about, this is one of the first houses I learned about when I started interior design school at New York School of Interior Design. We spent a lot of time talking about it. It's the Gamble House, built 1908 to 1909 by Green and Green, famous architects. Designed in 1908 at the apex of their career. They were brothers.
Although this was not a famous house when they were, it did not get
the
any
time,
kind of
right.
recognition until the late 40s.
Yes, and it's about low-pitched roofs, steep terraces,
sleeping porches, big deep overhangs.
Big, using Douglas fir posts and beams. And then the exterior is clad in shakes. Is that right, Diane?
Yeah.
We love that.
Cedar shakes wood. Which
wood. Redwood split.
And all the windows
shakes.
Are wood, and there's wood timbers over the headers. Yeah, and it's really cool. It's massive. It's like I can't remember how many square feet. It might be 6,000. I can't remember, but it's really large house, and has really large elevation pieces on the front, and really low pitched roofs, which really I don't know make it feel very grand to me.
Yeah, it feels grand. It feels masculine. It's got They used local river stones. There's not a lot of glass, but I think that it's an interior experience when you get inside.
Yeah.
Looking at it, the shakes are beautiful. There's a lot of interesting materiality to it on the face. But I think being inside of it probably feels really good. But it's not about being outside. It feels very different than that. The glass house, which is all about what's going on around it. I feel like this space is beautiful, or house is beautiful to look at, and then probably feels really good as an interior space to be in.
And this house is in Pasadena. I don't know if we said the glass house was in Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
So we're on the opposite coast. And one thing that's really famous from this house is the front doors.
Yes.
And they're just really low, wide, and beautiful. And they had stopped on their in Chicago at a Japanese, some type of museum. I can't mm-hmm. remember. Exhibit.
I remember that.
And mm-hmm. so there's been a little bit of that influence coming into their architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stained glass in here and a lot of wood. I mean,
yes.
There's wood paneling everywhere. The design of the stairs is incredible. The detail in
Burmese teak entry hall and Honduras mahogany in the dining room. A lot of built-in cabinetry. A lot of attention to detail. Yes, definitely Japanese influence for
mm-hmm.
sure.
And, you know, they had kind of that design where you go, I don't know, what is it, 7/8 up with wood paneling, and you
mm-hmm.
have
mm-hmm.
this wood trim piece. And then was it plaster maybe up above that?
Yeah, and I always think of that as a Tudor detail, Tudor
okay.
style, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I might be wrong about that, but that's what it feels like. And then how about that staircase and the stairwell and those shapes?
Amazing. And
really?
Then they have an angle nook fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Charles designed furniture for them, the one brother. So there's some pieces of furniture still there.
Which is similar to what Frank Lloyd Wright would do. He would design the furniture as well
mm-hmm.
for a full, complete experience. But I think one other thing to note about Green and Green is they did also use a lot of beautiful tile work, a lot of iridescent tile, and I don't know if there's any in this house, but there are some sort of stained glass moments that have
kind of
an
iridescent
feel.
Well, I know there's like a lot of the earth tones, the rust colors,
mm-hmm.
those kind of forest green colors, and they definitely had all kinds of that with the tile. And then also the lighting
mm-hmm.
design in there. It's a mix of wood and glass.
Very architectural lighting. It looks like a miniature of the house in a way. It's got a sort of...
the same proportion.
Mm-hmm, the same proportion of the house.
Designs.
A lot of timber. It's about timber in that space. So as far as materiality, I think those... it's very different than the glass house. And then I also love that all of these different houses we brought up celebrate different materials. We've got, you know, the plaster and the paint. We've got the tile. We've got the paper mache. And then we've got the concrete, the wood, and the glass. So a real good array of all the different opportunities for different building materials. All right. Thanks.
Our five houses we wanted to pick.
Thanks for listening.
And if you like the show or learned something new, please give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. Follow us on Instagram at Design Oracles, and you can also find more information at our website, designoracles.com.